All right, so the question we like to ask is what you ate for breakfast this morning so that it's nothing important, but I can just see how this sounds.
I ate a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit.
All right. Did you make it at home or you bought it from somewhere?
I bought it from Bojangles.
Oh, yum. All right. And do you live in Dunn?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. How far of a commute is it for you?
About 15, 20 minutes, depending on if it's the tractor coming down the road.
Oh, okay. So you just go straight down this road?
No, I actually go out to the left and take 55 all the way down.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was surprised with how long we were on the 40, because I thought we'd get off the 40 and be on something else for a while, but then by the time we left, it was like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. All right, awesome. Well, if it's okay with you, is this like a good... Mm-hmm. If you want to lean back or whatever, I can always move it. There's no problem. I should also explain, like, obviously there's no right or wrong answers. Like, just say whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. We just want to hear about your life.
If there's a question that seems confusing, is it okay if I say, like, you elaborate or explain?
Oh, completely, yeah. Okay. It's, like, very laid back. Like, it's not like we want, like, perfect quotes or something.
Okay.
Like that. It's just, like, you talking. Yeah, and also if there's anything you don't want to answer, you don't have to answer it.
Okay.
So, all right, great. Well, if you want to start by talking about, like, I'm really interested how you came to Commonwealth Health or came into healthcare.
Okay. So, I graduated from UNC Pembroke.
Mm-hmm.
I actually joined a sorority while I was there, Zeta Phi Beta. We would collaborate with the local health department there. So every year we would have to do like these sorority weeks where we would like reach out to the campus as well as the community, and we would do STI events. So we would talk about STIs, you know, pass out condoms, you know, educate the students about, you know, HIV testing as well as other STD testing. And we would work like Red Cross when it comes to like drawing blood and getting the community to donate blood and stuff like that. So it's crazy how it happened. I graduated in 2012, found out I was pregnant like a month after I graduated. I worked at AT&T. And it didn't work out because I kept getting sick like all the time with my pregnancy. And my mom is actually the reason why I applied here. She's a patient here. So I actually applied, and what helped me get the job pretty much was like my experience with going out in the community as well on campus and, you know, educating people about STDs and working with the local health department. So for a year, I was a counseling testing referral coordinator. And we would go out and do testing at substance abuse treatment centers for HIV, syphilis, and hep C. And if they were positive, we would refer them here, of course. And then after a year of that, that's when I got this promotion as a medical case manager, and I've been doing that ever since.
Awesome. Okay. Sorry, I'm just going to... I was going to pause that and forget. I forgot to mention that I'm trying not to say mm-hmm.
Oh,
it's very hard for me because like I want to be like, oh yeah, yeah, but just so it doesn't like mess up what you're saying, so I'm gonna try to just like nod, but I'm still listening. Okay, awesome. So your mom was a patient here.
Mm-hmm.
How long has she been a patient here for?
I would say about 7 years, and she's still coming mm-hmm. here till this day. She still comes here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
she doesn't have health insurance. She's a CNA. She does home health. She's been doing home health for probably about 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So with the whole low income and not being able to qualify for health insurance, and her job doesn't offer health insurance, this was the best place that fit her needs as far as receiving medical care.
Okay, so was there something, so she, you know, you had already done a little bit of healthcare stuff in the past, but she was like, I like this clinic, or you should apply here, type mm-hmm. of thing. Like, was there something specific about why she decided to come here as a patient?
Just because, like, she doesn't have health insurance, and the whole, we have, like, a slide scale fee mm-hmm. here, so that helped her, like, far as something reasonable, being able to pay, like, her copay when she does come here.
Right, okay. So did you grow up in this area?
I grew up in Irwin. It's still a rural area too. Like they have two stoplights. we have cows where as a matter of fact, the street where I live, there are cows on it. It's like a bunch of fields. you pretty much need a vehicle where I live at. Even being here in Dunn, I feel like you still need a vehicle. You know, it's not like Raleigh where you can call Uber or a Lyft. You need a car.
Yeah, so then when did you move here?
To Dunn?
Yeah.
So Dunn and Irwin are like 5 minutes away from each other. So they're not very far. I've been living in Dunn now for a little over a year. I have an apartment with my son and myself.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Can you talk more about your parents? Like, I know you mentioned before we started a little bit about your mom and, like, the things that she has struggled with.
I pretty much grew up in a single-parent home. I don't have a really good relationship with... It's not bad like it used to be, but we're not as close. He's, like, a mason now, like a brick mason. He's been doing that for years. He was previously incarcerated because he due to selling drugs, but he picked up a trade while he was in prison. So pretty much that, like, took him to where he's at now. My mom, on the other hand, she, you know, grew up... My grandmother and my grandfather, like, they lived together, so she, you know, got to experience all this stuff with me. I pretty much grew up from a single-parent home. She, like I said, she's a CNA. She's been a CNA for 15 years. Before that, she was a teacher's assistant in the school system. Me and my sister used to get sick all the time, like, all the time. And at the time, like, her employer just didn't really understand, and so she needed to, like, find something where it would kind of, like, work out with her with getting sick all the time and, you know, just someone who was more empathetic, I guess you could say. So that's how she ended up becoming a CNA and also needing to find a job during the summer. Mm-hmm. In between, you know, like, when school is out. She only has a high school education, then, like, she has her CNA 1 and 2 certification. Mm-hmm. So with us getting sick, like, my sister, she used to have, like, problems, like, getting ear infections, like, all the time. Like, she's had 2 surgeries all the time, like, numerous of times. She has even had to get, like, a surgery within her ear. I don't know what it was, but I know I remember her having to get a surgery. She used to wear this thing on the side of her head until her healing process completed. And she's a kindergarten teacher now. She's 24. With me, I remember when I was like 6 years old in kindergarten, and I had something called Kawasaki's disease. It's something like really, really rare. Don't really know too much about it. I remember being like in the hospital, and then like I used to keep a fever all the time, and like my skin would peel like a banana, like my skin would be peeling. Mm. That's the only thing I really remember about it. And the class, my kindergarten class, like sent me a bunch of cards or whatever, just, you know, telling me to get well and stuff. And then after that, you know, it was like an asthma thing with me. And then when I was 10, my mom, it's funny, and then it's kind of like, it makes me want to cry sometimes. My neck, it was like, it used to be like really, really dark. So she thought I wasn't washing properly. Yeah, she harassed me. And she eventually like took me to the doctor, and the doctor told my mom like I was pretty much showing signs of being a diabetic. So I found out I had diabetes when I was 10 years old. I've never taken insulin. I still take medication now, just the pills. I've always taken pills. I was actually on metformin I'm on this new medicine now called Invokana, and I've only been taking it for about 3 months. So it's been working out really well. But other than that, like, I was pretty much on metformin all, you know, since I found out I was a diabetic. Now I have a son. He's 5 years old, and I feel like I kind of like cursed him in my own little way, but he's gotten a little bit better. I only have one kid, like I said, and he would get sick all the time too. And he had like a really, really bad milk allergy. Like, it was bad. Like, we were taking him to the doctor all the time, and the last milk he ended up being on was Nutramigen. And so we actually just, like, me, my mom, and my sister one night, like, he just would not stop crying. He cried all the time. And I ended up taking him to Duke Hospital. Mm-hmm. And they saw, like, what I was seeing, too, with the whole crying and him, like, just milk would just projectile out of his mouth. And we followed up with a GI doctor because I just knew something wasn't right with him. And he actually gave us some medicine that, medicine and some milk that I had to get, like, from the family medical supply locally here. And it like made him have a turnaround, and he sees like a pediatric pulmonologist now. So I'm really big on like, because I know what my mom went through with me. So I try to like do the same thing with my kid. Like, that's just like, just this earlier this week, he woke up with like 101 fever. Like, he's gotten sick so many times, I already know like I need to go to the doctor like ASAP. That's what we did, you know, got him on medicine, and he's back to his normal self now. So just the things that my mom went through, like with me getting sick and her being out of work. And I enjoy working here too, because they are very empathetic. You know, my supervisor understands, you know, like kids get sick all the time, and I don't have to worry about things like my mom went through when she was raising me and my sister, where you had to like choose between your job and like, your, you know, your kid getting sick. So.
Yeah, definitely. So do you have memories of like what your mom would do when you guys would get sick?
Well, we would be home, and I remember, like, if one of us was sick, like, she would ask the doctor, like, well, I know they're both getting ready to get sick, so can you go ahead and start, you know, the other one on, like, an antibiotic or something, so we can just knock this out at one time. I do remember that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So would she take you to the doctor right away, or would she try something first?
She would take us to the doctor usually right away.
Mm-hmm.
She would. Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you try to do with your son?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I pretty much see, like, the same doctor every time I go. So, actually, the doctor that my son sees now was my pediatrician.
Oh.
So, she knows and understands the history of me and my sister, you know, like, always getting sick. And he's kind of, like, the same way. He just doesn't get as sick as much as he used to be. I even took him to, like, an immunologist because I was concerned. Like, you know, he's always getting sick. And he actually had to get another dose of a vaccine. I think it was Prevnar. I think that's what he got, Prevnar. And after that, he kind of, like, got better. So, he doesn't get sick as much now.
That's good. That's mm-hmm. good. So, do you have a sense of when your parents were little or when your mom was little, like, how she was taking care of when she got sick?
I know, like, they did a lot of old school remedies. Like, I remember with me and Art, like, when we would get sick, she would, like, heat up some Castor. It was so disgusting. She would, like, heat up Castor and, like, put it in orange juice, and we would have to drink it. Yes, so disgusting. Or she would buy us, like, some magnesium citrate or something like that. Like, oh, you need to clean yourself out.
No, okay, we're talking about home remedies.
Oh, yeah. So she would feel like we would need to clean our systems out after, like, we got over whatever we were going through. Even with my son, Amir, like, she used to tell me that I would have stomach problems when I was a baby, too. And she would, like, my grandma would, like, warm up apple juice. And then, like, we started with Amir. He used to be constipated, too, my son. We would put, like, a little bit of K-roll syrup in his milk or whatever. And then, actually, my pediatrician told me to stop doing that because it will do something. It's something about an allergen or something like that. I can't really remember. So I stopped doing that. Well, this isn't like a remedy or anything, but like when Amir was a baby, even when I was a baby, like, I feel like my grandma, like, instilled in my mom to start your baby on, like, the mixing the rice cereal up with their baby formula really early. So, that was something else, because my grandma would always say, like, you know, the milk is, you know, thin and they need to thicken it up because, like, babies are hungry. So, I kind of feel like that kind of, like, pushed over with me, too, because my mom learned that from her mom, too. But those are the only things about, like, home remedies was just, like, the K-roll syrup and, you know, Castor, pretty much. Like, you need to clean your system out, or every so often, you need to get all this stuff out your body, and you just need to stay home, clean your body out with a laxative, pretty much.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I'm ignorant, and I don't know what K-roll syrup is.
So, K-roll syrup is something, you probably seen it in a grocery store. It actually goes in pecan pie. It goes in pecan pie. I don't know.
It's like really sticky.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much like it's the custard in like a pecan pie. I don't know why they chose K-roll syrup, but that's what they used.
All right. So what about your grandparents? Where did they grow up?
So my grandmother grew up around here in Irwin. My grandfather was actually born in New York. His mom... pretty much
in New York or York?
New York.
Oh, okay.
She pretty much, I know, wasn't ready to like be a parent, so she had some family down here, her grandparents, and she sent my grandfather down here to live with his grandparents. My granddaddy pretty much had like a tough childhood, like not having shoes, not having the best clothes, you know, versus with my grandmother, like she grew up with both of her parents, was raised with both of her parents and, you know, and her other siblings as well. But far as my grandfather, like, you know, he knew what it was like to not where you were going to get your next meal from or where you was going to get some underwear or, you know, just regular clothes from. And they actually met each other when they were both 17. And, like, my granddaddy, you know, he's married now, but he used to always say, like, your grandma was, like, the best thing that ever happened to me because, you know, he just had such a rough childhood, you know, with food and shelter and stuff like that, you know. And it's, like, kind of like when he met my grandmother, which she, my grandmother ended up getting pregnant with my mom when she was 18. And so my grandmother, she ended up quitting school when she was in the 11th grade, getting ready to go to the 12th grade. She quit school, and just pretty much, like, stayed home and, like, took care of my mother. But she actually went back to get her GED. And she, it's crazy because she went back to school, like, before she passed away. And they got the results of her test after she passed away.
Oh, wow.
From her heart attack. So, yeah, my like, my granddaddy, he has his high school diploma. But my grandmother, she ended up getting her GED. Well, she doesn't know, but she got her GED afterwards.
So what was that like for her? You were telling me a little bit about her, the issues that she was having, like, when she was going through that. And she was pretty young, you said?
Mm-hmm. So, I don't necessarily know the reason for her, like, quitting high school. I just know, like, my mom told me she ended up quitting and she just stayed home. She actually had my mother and one of my great aunts are the same age. So she would stay home also and help with my great aunt, like, taking care of her too, while her mother went to work and her father.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had health problems later on.
Yes. So diabetes runs in my family really bad. Everybody wears glasses in my family, literally, even down to my son. High cholesterol, heart disease. My granddaddy now is on dialysis. He's actually getting ready to have surgery at the end of the month. He has to get one of his kidneys removed because he keeps getting stones and these different infections and stuff. So they're going to remove his kidneys. I do have a cousin now who, and my mother, as a matter of fact, like, they have, like, damage done to their kidneys, like, with their diabetes and other health problems right now. Pretty much, like, the main thing that I got from everybody as far as hereditary problems is, like, the diabetes and the high cholesterol, for the most part. Oh, and glasses, but I wear contacts now. So.
Sounds like you've had to put up with, your whole family's had to put up with a lot.
Yes, yes. Even my mom now, like, she has health problems. That's why I'm thankful for, like, a health center. Like, even though she can't afford to go to, like, the type of doctor, you know, like a regular doctor that I go to, like, she has somewhere where she can go and still get quality care. Because she has, like, really bad arthritis right now. On top of, like, the diabetes, heart disease, cholesterol, high blood pressure, you know, all that stuff. So she has somewhere where she can go and, you know, the walk-in hours here are convenient for her because her hours are kind of like all over the place. If she's having something going on, she, you know, she feels like it's really convenient to come here.
How do you think she feels like? Like, do you think she feels she has a community to handle all of this? Or are you taking care of her a lot? Or, like, how is she dealing with all of that?
So, you know, I feel like she's satisfied here. But usually the only time I'll, like, go with her to any appointments are, like, if she has to go to UNC to see a specialist. Because I feel like, you know, yes, coming here is important, but when you're going to see certain type of specialists and stuff like that, I feel like you need to have somebody to go with you. She understands what they're talking about and stuff, but it's just, like, I want to know because I know sometimes she kind of, like, hides stuff from me and my sister because she doesn't want us to worry too much. So usually I'll take off or my sister will take off and go with her to her specialty appointments.
Okay. So, yeah, and it's so far away, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, UNC is, like, from my mom's house, like, 1 hour and 15 minutes away.
Mm-hmm. So, you talked a little bit about your childhood, but I'm curious about hearing more what it was like growing up.
So, like I said, we grew up in a single-parent home. my sister, she was a cheerleader. Me, I was into like more so books and stuff like that. I played sports like one season. I played softball and I hated it and quit. Matter of fact, I quit before our last game, but they still gave me a trophy. With me, I was more into like science. So I ended up being on like the science teams like throughout school, even high school when we could be like on Science Olympiad and like compete against other schools and do like different science experiments. So that was more so my thing. I can say this with me growing up in a single parent home, my mom did have child support out on me and my sister's father, which we have two different dads. And I could always tell when one of our dads paid child support because we would get like a ton of stuff like randomly. It would be like, oh, it's kind of like a happy birthday type thing, you know. But she still provided for us. I'll tell anybody, like my mom, I feel like she's strong. I didn't really learn about the struggles my mama went through until I became an adult, which I feel like that was kind of like best. Because, you know, as a kid, she didn't want us worried. She wanted us to go to school, you know, get your education. I know I can say this also, like my mom, her main requirement was for us to graduate from high school. She didn't go to a four-year school. And she never said, you know, don't go to a four-year school. Like, what you do is what you do. Her main requirement was, you better get a high school diploma. And, you know, if you wanted to go be a manager at McDonald's, like, you need to be, like, the district manager or something like that. That's how she was. We didn't take, like, many trips, but she would take us to, like, theme parks and, like, North Carolina and stuff like that. And if we had a hobby, she would make sure, like, we would enjoy it or something like that. I can say that. I wouldn't say I had, like, a rough childhood or anything like that. And like with her struggling to pay bills and stuff like that, like I didn't learn about a lot of that stuff until I became an adult. Like some of these things, like, but I could always tell like when she would just get money from child support because it was like, oh, all these clothes are on the bed when we come home. Like, and she used to always make things like so special for us. It could be any holiday. It could be Easter. And we would wake up to like a bunny cake or something, like a cake shaped as a bunny or something like that. And she would have us like an outfit or a toy or something like that. Like my mom was really, really big on holidays. So that was her own way of making things more special for me and my sister.
So you think now with like, now that you have a kid, you like are looking back and thinking about how things work from a different perspective?
Yes. Especially money management. With her being a single parent, I feel like she, like, okay, so she has another sibling. And my aunt's two kids, like, they grew up in the home with both parents. You know, two incomes, military family. They kind of, like, if I said I wanted a North Face jacket right now and told my mama she heard me, she would, like, hurry up and go buy her daughter one. And even if we didn't get one when we wanted it, we would have it soon. You know what I'm saying? So, like, with my mom, I feel like she kind of like went in debt because we grew up in a single parent home. It's like she couldn't really afford, you know, the things that we did want right away. But I know like she's taking out like loans and stuff like that to make sure me and my sister had the things that we needed, you know. But with me, I feel like I have better money management skills. They're not the best, but it's just like I know I have to live, and I'm not gonna like go in a store and like just spend all my money, you know, just trying to, you know, like I remember like me and my sister had underwear for days, for example, you know, and my mom would have holes in her underwear, you know, just stuff like that. And you know, it's just like with, you know, me and my son, I'll go in the store and like spend money, but it's just not as bad as like my mom would do it. I feel like she took it too extreme.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious to hear more about, you were talking about that doctor that your whole family has had for like generations. And
so pretty much she was Dr. Marianne. She was my daughter as well as my sister's, and she's my son's daughter now. She was the one who actually helped with the diagnosis of me having the whole Kawasaki's disease, if I'm even pronouncing it right. I know, like, they monitored me a lot because it's so rare, and it was really rare to have something like this going on in a rural area. I know they had other doctors, too, like, chiming in on the whole situation. But I can call her and maybe like leave a message, or even just call the doctor's office and, you know, say this is going on, and they already understand, because we are like that. Like, as soon as we walk in, they're like, "Hey, Maria, hey, Maria." Like, it's that type of relationship with them. That's how well they know us. But she's very understanding. Me and her did have one falling out when it came to Amir and his whole milk issue, because she felt like he had colic. And that's just all it was, and he had acid reflux. But yes, I'm a first time mom. Yeah, I understand you've been a doctor for years, but it's like, I just feel like as a mother, sometimes you know, and you're not overreacting. And that's how I ended up taking him to Duke, you know, to get his stomach pretty much looked at, and they ended up resolving the issue.
So did you tell her, like, how did that interaction go?
I told her, and she was like, "Well, you did the right thing." And I was, you know, our thing. Like, yeah, I know that, because I'm just not going to, like, he would cry. It would be sometimes he would be crying and I would be crying. Like, because I'm like, I just don't know what to do. Like, he try everything. We don't switch the milks and all this other stuff. And when I got to Duke and saw that doctor, you know, he told me, he even explained, like, it's not going to happen overnight, but give it like 1 to 2 weeks. And my son was like any other normal baby. And this took like 6 months. Wow. Like, I was taking him to the hospital. I remember taking him to the hospital. And I got so ticked off, because after that, like, he has Medicaid. And, like, if you take your children to the hospital a lot or something like that, and I feel like it stemmed from the whole Duke situation, like, you'll have, like, this case manager that, like, which I wish other people knew about that, because I feel like I'm really resourceful. I didn't really need the service, but since they had to follow me because his bills were so high, she would ask, like, "Do we have any issues, like, with transportation, or, you know, like, is there anything we can help you with in the home?" And I kind of got offended, because it's like, I'm just trying to figure out what's wrong with my kid. Like, there are other people, like, whose children will have the flu or something, and they ain't even, you know, like, taking their children to the doctor and stuff like that. But they were helpful for the most part, and they didn't really bother me, because they kind of, like, knew I had it under control with, like, making sure he went to the doctor and making sure he went to the specialist that he needed to go to and stuff. But I did find that offensive.
You did find one?
I was just very offended.
Oh,
from it, because I'm like, why, as a social worker, you know, I understand you're like a Medicaid caseworker or whatever, as far as, you know, children and their health, but it's like, I feel like you could be using this time on someone else, because I'm like, I know what to do. I don't need someone, you know, you don't have to follow up with me. I don't, you know, need any assistance. Like, I've pretty much taken care of it myself. But I just let them do their job.
Yeah.
So pretty much, and I never had to do like any face-to-face interaction. Like, it wasn't like a CPS case or nothing like that. It was just more so Medicaid management, pretty much. Mm-hmm. They always would call, like, every so often, like, "Hey, how's Amir doing? You know, did you take him to the doctor?" "Yes, I already took him to the doctor." Like, I'm telling you, I'm handling this. So eventually they just like left me alone. And actually that case closed in January.
Okay, so were they calling from Duke, or were they, like, local?
They were local, from the local social, Harnett County Social Services, their Medicaid caseworker. She would just, like I said, she'd call every so often, "How's Amir? Oh, he's sick again, yes. Oh, have you made him an appointment? Yes. He's going on this day, and, you know, he has to see a specialist on this day. Oh, okay, well, you got it under control." And they would just leave me alone.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Even with the, they had an intern, and they would always, like, stick her on me for some odd reason. Like, would just calling and following up, because they was like, you've learned to be really nice and not rude and get so offensive about things. And I would just answer her questions for her, you know, for her class, and they wouldn't bother me anymore. Mm-hmm. Then, like I said, they ended up closing the case when he was 5.
Huh, okay. Mm-hmm. What about, and so you were 5, right, when you got diagnosed with, what was the disease again?
It's 6 when I found out I had Kawasaki's disease.
Okay. Do you remember? I mean, you were really little, but do you remember what that experience felt like for you?
I just remember getting sick, and they didn't really know what was going on. And I remember being hospitalized, and, oh gosh, my granddaddy, I do remember him, like, fussing at my mom because, like, braids are, like, really big when it comes to African Americans, especially when you're a little girl. So, like, my granddaddy was fussing at my mom, like, oh, you just need to just take her hair loose, like, kind of like how I have my hair in this ponytail now. Like, you just need to let her just be relaxed in the hospital. And yeah, I remember, like, one that night in particular, like, my mom had to, like, undo my braids, and I had just got my hair done. It was, like, in this bun or whatever, and she did my hair loose so I could just lay there and she could just, like, please him and get him to just be quiet or whatever. But I remember, like, the class sending me cards telling me to get well. I never failed my grade, so I graduated on time. I do know that, even with being sick a lot when I was 6 years old.
Oh, you had to be out of school for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, my mom, I can say when it comes to me and my sister, she was pretty much always on it with our help. And I feel like that's kind of like the same way I am. It just passed right on over, like, oh, my child's sick, let me get on it now type thing before it gets any worse.
Hmm. Do you think that, like, anything about your upbringing or being sick as a kid or having, like, gone through that experience with your son has affected the way that you do your job now?
At first, I didn't have the same supervisor that I have now. I love my supervisor now. The supervisor that I had previously, she didn't really understand, like, why my kid got sick all the time. And I even went over her head because I felt like she was just kind of, like, bugging me at the time. I went over her and, like, spoke to her supervisor, like, hey, you know, is it a problem? Like, am I going to lose my job because my child keeps getting sick? And she even explained to me, like, FMLA, like, if I needed to kind of, like, take some time off to, you know, get things under control with my son. She was very empathetic about it. And, you know, I feel like now my supervisor, now she, you know, she's a mom, as well as my previous supervisor was a mom too. You know, she's a mom and she, you know, she's a nurse and she understands, like, kids get sick. And, you know, with me, it's very rare that I take a day off and, like, just have peace of mind. It's very, very, I probably have done that twice. And it's, like, on a Friday because we close early at 1. But other than that, like, my PTO is for Amir, my son. Even with me, it's probably been 2 times that I have, like, literally had to leave work because I was just really, like, sick. Because I just look at my PTO that I gain every month, it's for him, like, in case he gets sick. Mm-hmm. So, I can say that.
So, what do you do when you're feeling sick?
Come to work. I'll make a doctor's appointment at my doctor's office. And sometimes I have been seen here. Like, if it's, like, a cold or something like that, I'll just, you know, come here or whatever. But if I feel like it's getting ready to be something major, like, I still have stomach problems now and I have to see a specialist. And as a matter of fact, I ended up having to go to the hospital, like 2 months ago in behind my stomach. It was just one of those flare-ups. But I will come to work. Like, I'll probably have the flu one day and, you know, and we'll come to work. It's got to be something that it's like, oh my God, I need to, like, I'm pretty much going to have to be admitted in the hospital. I will come to work. Like, my PTO is, it's just like, it's for me. Or that's just what I got in my head, pretty much. Because you just never know.
So what's your relationship like with, I mean, I don't know if you work directly with patients, do you? Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's that been like for you?
So I love it. I love working in this field so much, I will retire in public health. Like, I already know it. Like, when patients come in my office, I feel like, I want you to feel like you're at home. So however you act at home, depending on what it is, like, I want you to pretty much get that same feel here. I want you to be comfortable. You know, I don't want you to feel like you have to walk on eggshells around me, because I feel like I'm really down to earth with the patients. You know, I had an intake that came in 2 weeks ago, and, you know, he had tried to commit suicide. He told me, like, how he opened up, because we sometimes have to pick our intakes up. You know, we'll have a car ride, so I was like, what kind of music do you like? Or, you know, how's your day going? So, you know, I try to have that type of interaction and build up or whatever. And, you know, he, as a matter of fact, leaving from his house and we were in the curb, going towards the curb, he explained to me how he, like, walked out in front of a car and, you know, tried to commit suicide. He told me how that's how he found out he was positive, because he had to go to a hospital. And, you know, we're still, like, just talking and listening to music or whatever. Because I don't really like to go straight in about HIV. Like, I want to get to know you. Like, what type of person are you? How did you get to this stage that you're at now? And at the end, like, even when he came here and we finished and we, like, gave him education materials. Like, you know, do you need anything for your family? Like, do you need us to answer any questions right away for your family? Like my work cell phone, we have work cell phones. Like, I know a lot of people don't really like to talk at first on the phone. Like, you can text me. Like, I'm not going to text you anything that would indicate your status. Cause I look at it like, if I were in your shoes, don't text me what was my viral load. I'm going to immediately call you. Like, I have some patients that'll do that now. And I'm like, now, you know, I'm not going to text you that because I don't want, you know, people will pick up phones from anywhere and I don't want them to be like, oh my God, like, you know, I try to make it very discreet. But at the end of that intake, which this isn't the first time I was told that, he was just like, thank you. Like, thank you for being true and just being you. And he was like, I was just had it in my mind when I got in this car. I wasn't going to say anything. I was just going to put my headphones in. He was like, I feel like you're family. And I was like, thank you, because that just reassures me, you know, that I'm doing my job correctly. So yeah, that's just my little spiel. And I just feel like any other patients could say, like, Abrea, she's down to earth. Like, I just feel like they're my family, you know? Yeah. And the hardest thing about this job, I would say, is, like, when a patient dies, because you have your own, it's different relationships with different patients, you know? That's, like, the hardest thing. It's, like, when you lose a patient. And especially, like, if you don't even lose them and behind them dying from, like, HIV or something like that, you know? We have had patients who have been murdered, and it's just like, what in the world, you know? So that's like the hardest thing. And another hard thing dealing with this job is, I always tell patients, I'm not perfect. I'm not going to portray to be perfect. I will do my best to meet all your needs, and so we can reach all your goals. And it's just like, we have patients like in Duplin County, for example. You know, Duplin County is another rural area, and it's like they do not have a lot of resources at all. Like, social services isn't even that, they need more resources in my eyes. And it's like, when you can't help a patient based on where they live, that, like, really, really gets to me. Because you don't want them to go without, like, lights or, you know, having their rent not paid or water or something, or even food. So.
Yeah,
that's like one thing. If it's like if everything is out of my hands to help a patient,
right? And they can't do anything about it. It's just where they live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? Do you ever feel like you kind of have to decompress when you get home after, like, hearing some of these stories?
Yes. Especially like the death ones, or like if it's someone being mistreated or something like that. You know, it's kind of like I've had to learn, like, really work at work. Like, even with my work home, I even answer it after hours. I just can't help it. Like, I try. But, yeah.
So how do you take care of yourself? Like, how do you, you know, if you're feeling really stressed or something, like, is there something you do just to treat yourself and, like...
I have looked up, like, I call it the woosah techniques. Like, you know, like, breathing exercises, or, you know, like, let me just go for a walk and clear my head or whatever. You know, that type of thing. Because I'm a single parent primarily, too. And, you know, I have had to really work on, like, leaving work at work. And even now, like, I'm going back to school to get my master's. So that's another thing, like, time management and just, like, separating work, school, mom. Like, all of that I have had to learn to, like... You just gotta leave work at home for the most part.
Yeah. Are you here full time?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're also doing your master's.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you getting your master's at?
At Capella University. Mm-hmm. I go online. I'm only doing one class at a time right now because I just feel like that's just best. You know, it may take a little longer, but I'd rather have an A in a class versus like a B or something like that. And, you know, like, trying to double up on class, it's just not realistic for me with working 40 hours a week. You know, then taking care of my son and trying to do homework at night when he goes to bed and stuff.
Yeah. Well, you talked a little bit, we talked a little about your doctor, your experience with your doctor. What do you think, what would be, like, the ideal doctor to you?
Someone who is empathetic, trustworthy, someone that's easy to talk to, relatable in their own type way, down to earth, not someone that's not judgmental. So, like, if I were to come in and I had something really personal to, like, talk to them about, like, I don't want you to be turning your nose up or anything like that, because then I definitely wouldn't want to be around you then. Someone, like, that's really informed and that, like, keeps up with technology. That was, like, one of my things with Amir's pediatrician when her and I kind of, like, had that whole falling out with the whole milk thing. I feel like, yeah, you're a seasoned doctor, but you also need to keep up with what's going on. And there are a lot of kids with milk allergies. So, you know, this isn't something that's uncommon. And just someone that can just try to do their best, you know, be the best doctor that you can be. Like, don't try to make me a whole bunch of promises and you can't come through with them, you know. Just be the best you can be. And if something is out of your hands, refer me in, like, the best direction of where I need to go. Pretty much.
Yeah, just, like, admit when they don't know.
Yeah, and I have had that happen. It's so crazy. Working here, like, when did that happen? It was, like, a year ago. I had, like, these spots, like, over here on my foot. Like, it was, like, some pigmentation issues or something going on. And my doctor, she was, at the time, the PA that I was seeing, she was, like, younger. And she just didn't know. Like, she admitted, she was like, Abrea, I really don't know what's going on. And she referred me to, like, these different places or whatever. You know, stuff like that I can respect. And I found out what was going on with it. It was my foot being close to here.
Oh, really?
Yes. A dermatologist ended up telling me, like, that's what it was.
Huh.
But, you know, I can respect situations like that. Just try to get me in the right direction so I can come up, find out what's going on with myself, you know? Or even, like, with Amir's situation, you know, with the whole, you know, went to Duke. And even with, because he has asthma, like, the pulmonologist, what I like about UNC, like, if you feel like there's another concern, like, his pulmonologist, she will refer you to someone else that, you know, so you can get the answers that you need. And actually, the immunologist was in the same department as hers. So, that was a blessing, too.
Do you feel like it's easy to be transferred to different departments? Like, have they made it easy, or is there...
Yes, I feel like, especially with UNC, because Duke, we only, like I said, just went there for, like, GI issues. But, like, at UNC, I feel like it was Dr. Heron, she just... Oh, okay, we'll just refer you to an immunologist. It's actually here at our children's clinic, so you already know where to go. You know, that type of thing. It was an easy transition just to see him. As a matter of fact, I would do the appointments on the same day. And they, you know, work the scheduling out for me to do that.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'd have to drive twice.
Yeah. even his initial appointment with his pulmonologist was at, like, Chapel Hill, and she was like, y'all don't have to come here. She was like, you know, his situation is a, you know, a major situation, but it's like, it can be treated at, like, the children's clinic that was in Raleigh, because it was like a satellite office.
Mm-hmm.
And she even was nice enough to tell me that, and we would just go to Raleigh and, you know, hop on the highway, hop right back off. It was very convenient. It wasn't a long drive. It wasn't a long wait.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. I guess I'm interested in how... So you've been... I mean, I know you haven't been done this technically this whole time, but you were close by.
Because mm-hmm, we will... So, like, Irwin doesn't have any restaurants, really. They have one. It's a pizza house. It's been there forever, I would say. You pretty much have to go to Dunn for everything. Like, to Walmart... Irwin does have a grocery store, so we don't have to worry about that, but, like, and we do have, like, two gas stations, so we would have to go to Dunn, like, if we wanted to go, like, to Filk or, you know, something, like, really, really close by.
Yeah. Do you feel like these areas have changed since you have remembered, or?
Not really. It's not really anything here. As a matter of fact, it's funny how you say that, because I was talking to my mom this morning, telling her how I wanted to move. I want to either move, like, somewhere that's, like, 30 minutes away, so I'm not too far from work, and, you know, I can easily get to Amir, like, far as school, because he starts kindergarten in August. So, yes. So, it's just nothing really here. Like, if I want to go... Now, I do live near a park, and we do have a splash pad, like, you know, stuff like that. But if I wanted to take my son to the movies, I would have to go to, like, Smithfield or Fayetteville. Like, those are the two closest areas. That's, like, 25 to 30 minutes, pretty much. There's just nothing really here. Like, I feel like Dunn hasn't expanded, pretty much.
Why do you think it hasn't?
I honestly don't know. Honestly, I really don't know. I guess that would be something like with the city or, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. But it hasn't expanded. Mm-hmm. Even all the way down to, like, people's mentality, I feel like, hasn't really expanded mm-hmm. to me. I remember when I first started working here. And I was so excited, like, oh, you know, this is something different. Like, you rarely hear people working with people who have HIV or anything in relation to, like, HIV. And I had someone ask me, so, are you HIV positive? I'm like, what? Like, what would make you ask that? And they was like, oh, because you're working in that field. So, I'm like, that's really ignorant of you to say. And no, I'm not. Like, just because I'm working, you know, in that field or whatever doesn't mean that I have to be positive. So, we're like, are you going to call a pharmacist a drug dealer? Like, you know, that's just how I look at it. So, but now I don't care. Like, I tell people, yeah, this is where I work. Because you just never know who's going through something. And they may need to come confide in you to get some type of help or a resource.
Do you feel like there's still stigma?
It is. A lot. You know, for one, I always say no question is a dumb question. But it's like I've been here 4 years and it's just like the lack of knowledge people have about transmission of HIV just really gets to me. Like, and then I also feel like we live in this day and age, well, around here. You look down on someone that...
We can pause this if you want
to. Oh, no, you're fine. It's like people look down on the people who know they're HIV positive, for example. Versus, you're not going to look down on someone's kind of like, I ain't been tested. I don't need to know. It's kind of like outside, out of mind thing. So my thing is like, why are you looking down on the people who don't have the courage to be tested and find their status? Because mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, majority of the people who are HIV positive, like, they're in care, they're taking their medicine, they're doing what they have to do to protect themselves as well as others. You know, I just feel like it's kind of like a just sweep it under the rug, like, out of sight, out of mind, I don't even know my status. It's
better not to know.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm not skinny, or I don't look sick, I'm not, like, having bad diarrhea. You know, like, people still think around here like that.
Are these things that, like, patients have told you or just that you've heard? Like,
just stuff I have actually heard. We did a conference a few months ago. It's Star something. And we did, like, Q&A. And, like, the women in there were asking, like, well, what if my, you know, hairdresser is positive? Is there a way, like, she can give it to me? Or if it's, like, blood on this mouse or something, like, and I wipe my hand by it or something like that. Like, can I, you know, get HIV that? And we're all just like, you're out here having sex for one. And it's like, you don't even really know, you know, how HIV is transmitted. So I do feel like the rural area really needs to be educated.
Yeah. What about outreach? Like, going to people who don't know that they have to come into the clinic type of thing. But it's hard because it's, like, everyone's so far apart.
Yeah. So, really, from my experience, the only way people really know that is if we do, like, a community event. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed gift cards are, like, that's what gets people in. If you're just giving away, like, a water bottle or something like that, like, people will just walk by, they may pick up condoms. I even think it's funny when you have older women, they're like, oh, I'm getting these for, like, my friends, or they'll, like, come pick up lube, and I'm like, oh, I'm getting this for my grandkids, and I'm like, now you know you're getting that for yourself probably, too. Like, don't, people are so ashamed, like, we're adults, you know? It's like, it's no need to be ashamed, like, we're not being judgmental. You know, just, we want you to get these supplies so you can protect yourself and we can kind of, like, get a control on the spread of STIs. So, but far as, like, outreach, usually if, like, you have to, we give out pamphlets, like, come look up pamphlets, like, hey, these are the services we offer. Like, a lot of people don't even know about some people don't know about Commonwealth Health. They don't even know, like, the services that we do offer. So, I do feel like community events are the way to, like, get your name out there so people can know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you feel about one of the kind of big new things that people are talking about is, like, telemedicine or telehealth in rural areas? And you were talking about, like, doctors and being, like, adapting to new technologies. Do you have any opinions about that?
With me, like, I'm for telemedicine because I think they do some type of it here with behavioral health. But you still kind of want that connection, almost like that face-to-face connection. Even if like it was like, okay, your initial appointment is gonna be face-to-face or whatever, but like with our situation, as far as this department, it would be nice if we could incorporate that. Because have you ever heard of Rayford? No. Rayford is far. Like, it's a rural area also, but it's not like as rural as here. We have patients who live like almost an hour and a half to 2 hours away from here. Yeah, and so in cases like that, and they don't have their own transportation, and we have to go all the way there to get them, and then, you know, come all the way here, and then take them all the way back, and then we still got to drive ourselves all the way back here.
Oh, so you guys, like, transport patients?
Yes, mm-hmm. So we'll go pick them up, bring them back here, then take them back home, and then we'll come back here. That's like a whole day's work.
That's a whole day.
And we do that for Dr. Shimakoa, like her patients, the IV clinic, if they have a behavioral health appointment, if they have a dental appointment. Now, one thing that is beneficial is, like, we have satellite sites. So, like, for example, that patient that lives in Rayford, I can take them to Tar Heel. So, that's just, like, a little closer than coming here. But, like, telemedicine would be beneficial for patients like that. Even if we had something that we could walk, like, put in a bag and, like, set up, you know, at a patient's house or something like that. That would be awesome, because then we wouldn't be using as much gas, and you know, that's like, that's four times, like, going to pick them up, bring them back, take them back home, and then we come back, you know, that will save us gas. So I feel like in instances like that, when patients do live miles and miles away, we should incorporate telemedicine.
Do you think doctors would be on board?
I think some of them. I think it would just depend on the person, you know. But if it were ways where we could, like, test more and, like, these people were getting in care, I feel like they would be, you know.
Yeah.
And then, like, with us, like, our patients who don't have transportation. So, like, let's say we got a patient who feels like they have the flu. We have to still go all the way there. You know what I mean? And that could be a way where, like, telemedicine could help, too.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely something that is being talked about. And, like, the health kiosk where, like, you know, you'll go into a drugstore and just walk into those little things. Sometimes they can look a little creepy, like, I'm just gonna be in this tiny box and, like, get my blood pressure taken.
Right.
Yeah. Do you have a sense of, like, if patients, you know, I mean, patients who maybe they don't come to all their appointments or whatever, like, have they told you about where else they get their health care from?
So, a lot of our patients do not have health insurance. So they don't even, for one, want to go to the hospital. So, like, there are some situations where, like, if a patient's having chest pains, they'll call here. And, you know, Dr. Shimko will be like, you know, you need to go to the hospital because you could be getting ready to have a heart attack. And it's like, oh, my God, I don't want a hospital bill. And it's like, no, this could be life or death. Like, you know, you need to go to the hospital. And, you know, sometimes it can get upsetting. Or, like, if a patient is always missing appointments. I'm like, you have all these resources. You know, sometimes I, like, will break it down and, like, show them, like, you know, I've had a patient lose a bottle of medicine. And I had to, like, show them, this is how much Strabio costs. This is why you should be appreciative of these, you know, funds where you pretty much are not paying for anything for your health care or your medicine. So sometimes you have to remind patients of how blessed they are. To make them kind of, like, understand, okay, yeah, I need to take this more serious. Like, you know, HIV is not a death wish type thing.
Do you have any other patient stories? Like, I mean, obviously, don't identify anyone, but any, like the guy you were talking about with the relationship you formed with him? That was really interesting.
Yeah, so, Lord, where could I start? I have some, like, just... It's just some patients, like, they just have... A lot of our patients are really, really talented in their own way. Like, they're hairstylists, they like to cook, or they're, like, can draw really good. I've never realized how talented this population could be. You know, some people just always think, like, they're homeless or whatever like that. You know, I just wish, like, with us being in a rural area, they could see, like... For one, HIV does not discriminate. You know, we have patients that come here that are college professors, you know, all the way down to people who are homeless. You know, when we help a patient find housing, you know, as a matter of fact, one yesterday, he pretty much was using cocaine. And, you know, he was pretty much on the verge of being homeless. Like, he was here and there between, like, living with his sister, daughter. You know, they would have a falling out or whatever. And, you know, now he has an apartment now. You know, and he was just telling me, like, you know, thank you, Aubrey, so much. Like, I'm so appreciative because I didn't have anywhere to go. Like, you know, and he receives disability every month. And, you know, he's good with his money. He makes sure his bills are paid. You know, if he, his medicine, you know, gets delivered there. So he's really, really on top of things. And he was like, I have a sense to live now. You know, I have somewhere to stay. I know that my bills are going to be paid. I know my, you know, as far as I can take my medicine in peace now. You know, situations like that when we have success stories, like, really, really make me happy. Because it's like, you went through this struggle. And no, it was not easy. But you got through it. And it's like, it'll make you feel like, you know, the things we, the little things like you and I may complain about, and you have someone who's worried about, like, do I take this medicine in front of my aunt? And she wonder, like, what am I taking? Or how am I going to get some food or clothes or whatever, you know? It just makes you be more appreciative for the things that you do have, because you never know someone's situation.
Hmm. Yeah, that must feel really good once you've gotten someone housing or something. Mm-hmm. And usually see people after that, like, you just keep seeing the same people.
Yes, so we do clinic twice a week. Mm-hmm. We pretty much, you know, do like a little brief face-to-face with all patients. Some of them will run out of here and we don't catch them, of course. But usually it's like a, you know, hey, how are things going? If we need to, like, go over case management paperwork that they usually do twice a year. And in between, we'll still, like, see them, because most patients come, like, every 3 months or every 6 months. And we'll just touch bases with them and, you know, like, how are things going at home or work, or do you need help with anything? Like, are you having, you know, like, our patients who have insurance, like, they're the main ones who kind of, like, they don't really tell all their business usually. And it's like, you know, how's it going with paying for your medicine? Like, can I get you a PA, a patient assistance card, you know, that'll lower your copay, or the medicine will end up being free? Like, have you been down lately? Like, are you battling anything? Like, do you need a behavioral health appointment? Like, don't forget about these resources. You can come here, you know, and be seen. But usually, like, when the success stories, like, just keep you pushing, you know, and, like, you know, okay, I'm doing my job right. I know every day isn't easy, but, you know, it just, you know, just gives you that motivation.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have one last question, unless you want to say anything else. I'm curious, as someone who works in the healthcare system, and you've also had a lot of experiences with the healthcare system, if you were going to change one thing, like, if you had a magic wand, what would it be about the healthcare system?
Funding, just from an HIV, you know, perspective, just funding. Like, it's not, like, people, I'll tell you this, I wish sometimes that we could make a video, like a day-to-day video of what it's like to work in Positive Life and the things that patients go through, or just, like, driving, and, you know, so people can get a better understanding of why we need funding to help patients to continue to live. You know, it's not just about, like, them coming to see the ID doctor. They could have an issue with something else. Like, if I'm homeless, I'm not going to be worried about taking my medicine every day. I'm going to be worried about food and having somewhere to lay my head. You know, I've heard about patients living in abandoned homes, you know? So funding, if I could change that, it would be the money to provide the care we need, treatment, you know, finding cures and stuff like that. I feel like it would just cover everything, you know?
Yeah.
So funding, that would be my main thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to talk about?
I hope I answered all your questions, but I can't think of anything else. Yeah. I feel like I rambled so much and got talking
about something. No, it was perfect. I actually forgot at the beginning to introduce, I was just to say who I am and who you are and stuff. Okay, so this is Maddie Kameny. I'm with
Aubrey Crowder.
And we're at Conwell Health in Dunn, North Carolina on June 15th, 2018. The other thing I have to do, which is a little bit awkward, is I have to record like 30 seconds of silence, because when they're editing and they need to paste, like, if they, I don't really know the details, but they need 30 seconds of silence, so I'm just going to let it do that. Okay.